This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Police across the nation are arresting more older people. And as the Marshall Project reported late last year, the consequences can become dangerous when people getting arrested have dementia. The Cincinnati Police Department received a grant to train officers on how to interact with people who have Alzheimer's disease and dementia. The grant covers training related to people with autism, too. Joining me now to talk about what the training entails and why it's important are Episcopal Retirement Services Center for Memory Support and Inclusion Director Shannon Braun. Welcome, Shannon.
Hello. Thank you.
And Cincinnati Police Department social worker Debbie Searles. Thanks for being here, Debbie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And Bob Owen, who is diagnosed with young onset dementia and has assisted with this training. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Well, thank you for having me.
Episcopal Retirement Services is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Shannon, I want to start with you. Our population is aging. An analysis of U.S. crime data by the Marshall Project found the number of arrests for people over 65 grew by nearly 30% between 2000 and 2020. What does that say about the importance of this training that we're going to be talking about?
I think it says everything about the importance of the training. It's when officers arrive on a scene and are trying to figure out with limited information when they first arrive what's going on with people, just knowing what the possibilities can be and how we know dementia affects cognition and affects decision-making and problem-solving, it could be that officers would encounter someone that has some sort of cognitive deficit or cognitive issue, and it's so valuable just to have that little bit of background information in their back pocket for when they encounter that.
Debbie, another statistic I ran across, national data from the CDC estimates that from 2010 to 2020, more than 12,000 people, 65 and older, ended up in a hospital emergency room for injuries caused by police or private security. That's another Marshall Project statistic. Does that just highlight the importance of really making sure that officers have these tools in their toolbox when they're interacting with different older adults?
Yes, because we want them to be able to take a step back and really look at the possibility of what could be going on that may not be visible from the outside, but on the inside. And knowing that sometimes just a lack of response is not a matter of being disrespectful. It's a matter of not being able to respond. And I think sometimes those statistics show that it's not taken. They're not looking from the outside. They're looking from what they're seeing in front of them versus what could be.
Yeah. Shannon, there have been these heartbreaking news reports about police encounters that have gone wrong with people who have dementia or Alzheimer's or even autism in other parts of the country. Tell us a little bit more about how brain conditions like this can affect the way people process officers' commands.
So with dementia, there are a lot of communication barriers and language deficits that happen as part of the disease process. So sometimes they are not understanding the commands that they are being given by an officer, and they're not able to comprehend how to respond effectively or appropriately. So a lot of things can get lost in translation, I think, which can go down the wrong track and really kind of lead to some of these problems that we do see in some of those instances.
Yeah. Bob, you live with dementia, although you told me when we talked last week that it hasn't hit you like a freight train at this point. As someone with dementia, though, explain what it can mean when someone says no to an officer. The way you described it to me when we talked last week, it sounds like it's more complicated than refusing a command.
Yeah, when a person with dementia says no, it's not no as you understand it. You know, they're not being belligerent. They're not refusing to cooperate or follow instructions. You know, a person may be confused or overwhelmed. Saying no feels easier than admitting my brain's not processing your words fast enough to make sense of your meaning or intentions. I'm scared. So that's particularly dangerous if they're being in the presence of a police officer, because generally, you know, that's not taken well by police officers, because they expect compliance. So when they give an instruction and a person says no, You know, that sends a red flag, and that's why the training's so important, so that when the officer hears that no, and they've had the training, they understand that, given everything else, you know, they need to ask the question, the follow-up questions of whoever else is there, you know, does this person have dementia, or asking the person. So.
Sure. It might mean, no, I don't understand, not no, I'm refusing to comply with what you've asked me. Yeah.
Right. And that could be a whole different consequence in the long run. Hmm.
Debbie, what can officers encounter out there in the field when they're, you know, I know a lot of this training deals with people who've wandered away and become missing persons, but what can officers encounter when they come across somebody who has dementia or Alzheimer's or even autism, although we're focusing on dementia and Alzheimer's today?
Sometimes when they are further along within, you know, the diagnosis, they become nonverbal. They're not able to say who they are, what's going on, where they live, providing addresses and phone numbers. So just not being able to identify themselves and necessarily where they come from. So if they're, say, miles from home, not able to give street directions to where they live, or what's the nearest landmark to your home, not being able to provide any information because they're simply not able to recall that information. So officers come across that, and then sometimes that's why, you know, there's missing person reports, because the family members don't know where they are, and they're not able to tell an officer where they need to be.
Oh, that's got to be so frustrating, not only for the family and the person, but for the officers, too, when that's the situation.
Yes, and they feel somewhat helpless. I can't help, but I want to help. So thankfully, social media sometimes comes into play. We can post pictures and say, this person was located. Does anyone recognize them? And if you do, you know, call the police or report who they are so that we can connect them back with their families.
And Debbie, I understand 50 officers have been through this training so far, with more to be trained in August. What difference has it made? Describe the kind of before and after, you know, in terms of how officers maybe dealt with these situations before the training and now how they deal with them.
I think it's much more of an open mind. They come in to the training thinking that they are well educated on them and what to do, whether they've had family or friends or people that they know. And then they hear the training and they have that aha moment of, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't think about that. And we encourage them to take a step back and think, if this was your family member, how would you want them treated, regardless of what they're able to respond or not? And I think that it's made a big difference. We are getting more calls from officers connecting families with trying to get with the program to see if it's appropriate for their family member. So it's definitely hitting home, and they're using the resources that are available to the police department.
When you see that aha moment, is that for young officers? Is that for veteran officers? Do you see the aha moment register for everybody in different ways?
I think it does. I think you have, years ago, autism and dementia were not conversations at the table. Now it's an everyday conversation. You hear about it in the news, you see it on the paper. So older officers may not have been trained de-escalation skills. Newer officers may have, but maybe not for these types of populations. So the more tips and skills we give them, the better off they are on the streets.
Yeah. Debbie, this training started with detectives from the Missing Persons Department. Why was that such an important place to start? And what types of skills does the training really teach officers?
So we want to be able to bridge the gap between the community and the police department to let those populations know that we do care. We are focused on those populations because they're growing every day. People more and more are getting diagnosed, which means more of them on the street and living within our community. So having the training gives the officers the tools, such as communication skills, de-escalation skills like Shannon referred to, just being able to know what could possibly work to be able to make that connection with that person, to be able to reunite them with their family or facility, whichever is appropriate.
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about special training Cincinnati police officers have received to improve their interactions with people who have dementia, Alzheimer's disease, or autism. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Shannon, as Debbie mentioned, these really are de-escalation techniques to a large degree. How are these techniques different for people with dementia, Alzheimer's, or even autism? I guess I'm wondering if some of these techniques can be helpful for other populations too, or even with everyone.
It's exactly right. Even when, so when we give the training, we focus a little bit on communication breakdowns and why someone with dementia would have a problem communicating. So we hit on those first, and then we really talk about the communication strategies or tips that the officers can employ when they encounter someone. Well, the question is, when they walk up to a scene, how do they know what the person has, that they don't have their medical record in the car? So I think it's just, as Debbie said, an open-mindedness and an option that maybe this could be a factor here. And so when we talk about the communication strategies in the training, we say, you know, this isn't rocket science. A lot of this could be for someone who maybe is in the depths of grief and they're not able to respond appropriately. Maybe they have an addiction problem. Maybe they have another mental health situation happening, or they're in some other sort of crisis. So a lot of these techniques are really able to be used for all of those different populations.
Bob, when you and I talked earlier, you said you thought this training was desperately needed. Why do you think that?
I think it's desperately needed because the number of people with dementia, Alzheimer's, is increasing. You know, it's like 20% of the population is impacted by Alzheimer's now, either the patient or their caregivers. And, you know, like for me, young onset Alzheimer's is the label given to someone who's diagnosed before age 65. I started becoming aware of my symptoms as early as age 53, but there are people being diagnosed with young onset Alzheimer's in their 30s or younger now. So unfortunately, it's increasing. And sadly, only 3% of doctors or healthcare people have been trained, have any training in dementia, Alzheimer's. You know, it may just be in passing in a class on, you know, behavior or whatever. And that makes it worse. So you have people out there who aren't diagnosed yet. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is critical for the protection of people. And I think for the safety of the officers.
Sure. Well, and if that's the percentage for healthcare workers, I've got to believe it's even lower for people in law enforcement. I mean, there are so many things to learn in law enforcement. And Bob, I believe you told me you haven't had an encounter with a police officer yet in any of these ways. But is that something that kind of weighs on your mind?
Yeah, it is. You know, I've been very fortunate that my journey has been a meandering path. And like you said, it hasn't hit me like a freight train. So I have not had an encounter, but I know people who have had encounters, and it's scary. And it's scary for me to think that could happen to me at somewhere down the road. Because it's going to be scary for my wife, too.
Sure. Shannon, this GRASP program, as it's called, is aimed at reducing injuries and deaths among populations who wander, as I understand
it.
Are these techniques useful in other situations, too? I'm thinking of cases of shoplifting, for example. I was, you know, reading these stories, heartbreaking stories about people. I guess that's a common thing sometimes among people who have dementia or Alzheimer's. They may take something without thinking they've paid for it or not realizing they need to pay for it. How can these techniques apply to other situations too?
Absolutely. So certainly we are kind of initially focused on wandering because that certainly affects people that have dementia, and it's so important for the officers to understand that. But yeah, like you said, shoplifting is something that does happen to people with dementia, specifically frontotemporal dementia, which affects primarily the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain at the beginning of the disease process. So that's where we self-regulate, and that's where our personality is stored. So sometimes for someone that has FTD or frontotemporal dementia, the first signs that anyone recognizes are inappropriate behaviors such as shoplifting. And so acknowledge, and a lot of those folks are, like Bob was saying, diagnosed at a younger age. It impacts people earlier than say Alzheimer's disease does. So they aren't fitting the bill of who you think would typically have cognitive impairment. And so I think that even highlights more the importance of getting this message out, that it's not always what you think it's going to look like.
Debbie, can you run us through kind of a typical encounter when you're helping with, you know, as social worker for the Cincinnati Police Department, do you get calls from the officers, hey, I'm going on a missing persons run, and I think it might be somebody who has dementia or Alzheimer's? Walk us through what a typical interaction is like for you.
If the family is notified the police department that the person missing does have that, they do call us in just for support, because there are a couple other social workers on staff also. But just for the supporting of the families and supporting of the officers. And once the devices are within the family's hands, if they need to be used, then they call me in for support and also locations that are necessary. But it's a matter of the officers notifying us that there is a family that could potentially, you know, use this program. And then they reach out to us and let me or them make the contact just so that we can have a conversation. You know, is this something that you think would work for you, would help you feel more secure with your family and the community? And let them know it exists, because a lot of people fear the police because they're afraid to say my family member's missing for what may come with that.
And when you talk about devices, walk us through that. What devices are you talking about?
So we have two different devices. We have one that is a shoe sole that you slide into the shoe. It has a GPS tracker in it. And then the other one is an iTrack device, which is about a 1.5 by 1.5 square cube that you can attach to a belt loop, a shoe eyelet, and it's on the person. And then if they were to go missing, we can track the GPS through a device.
Wow. So people can call the Cincinnati Police Department and say, hey, I have a loved one who tends to wander off. I'm worried. And they can get access to these devices?
Yes. I mean, I can give my phone number, which is what would be the easiest way to get in touch if you feel that this could be a program that could potentially work for your family. And then we go from there and we do a basic assessment as long as you live within the 5 districts of Cincinnati with a diagnosis.
What else, when we talked on the phone earlier this morning, I'm going to let everybody know we did that. So I cheated. I talked to you in advance. What else can people do? You mentioned this smart 911 that people can kind of plug into to maybe help in these situations too. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a program called Smart 911. It can be accessed via phone or a desktop computer. And what it does is allows you to set up a profile for your home based on a phone number, because we know that 70% of communication is by cell phone. This allows you, if you were to call 911, create a profile for your family to include as much or as little information as you want, including medical diagnosis and pictures of your family members. So if they do go missing, when you call 911, that information also pops up, which gives first responders a heads up of medical issues, a potential picture, any other information that may be helpful in finding and locating family members.
Shannon, is that something you all recommend too? I mean, I know most of your clients are living in your facilities, but is that something you all recommend to family members?
Oh, absolutely. I think any way that you can plan for the future and all the ways that looks, but definitely, I think just in case, wandering is really scary because you don't think it's going to happen until it does, and the first time is a awful, scary time. So any information that we can all share and have access to that can help just in case something happens, I think is just so valuable.
Yeah. Bob, is that something that you've had any experience with yet, this wandering? Is that something that you and your wife have talked about for the future?
No. Well, no and yes. No, okay. I haven't had a problem with that. number one, I don't drive. I've had an eye issue, so I don't drive anymore. So getting in a car and driving somewhere and getting lost is not a concern for me. But with the wandering, has not been a problem. But yes, Brandy and I have talked about.
Yeah, thinking ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, thinking ahead.
Yeah. Bob, how important is it to treat people with dementia whether it's a police officer or somebody else having an encounter with a person with dementia, how important is it to treat people with dementia in a way that makes them feel they have some control of the situation, that gives them some agency? Is that an important part of all this?
Yes, it's extremely important because a lot of people with dementia don't feel like they have control over anything. So and that's one reason people say no. They have control over that instant. So it's important to give people the
agency.
Make them feel like they have a choice or have some control over that. So asking questions in a way, approaching them in a way that is non-confrontational, less scary, respectful. Unfortunately, sometimes people see some of the problem, they raise their voice. It's like, but then, people aren't deaf. So, when you raise your voice, how they approach them, it can can cause a totally different response in this situation.
Yeah. Shannon, it sounds like even eye contact can be the way you make eye contact with somebody. I mean, it can come down to things as simple as that.
I think it all starts with eye contact. Smiling, making eye contact, making that beat of a connection can really help with de-escalation. Having someone understand you, understand the words, read your lips even, put all the pieces together, it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Episcopal Retirement Services Center for Memory Support and Inclusion Director Shannon Braun, Cincinnati Police Department Social Worker Debbie Searles, and Bob Owen, who is diagnosed with young onset dementia and assisted with the training we've been talking about. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening. Thanks, Bob. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Derek Smith. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.